Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday race fan. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, SteveBick.com, as I dab up a little coffee that I just spilled. I'm downstairs making a cup of coffee, you know. And I look up and I see 8:59. I'm like, holy cow, get back upstairs. So just in time, but I did spill. Not on PPs, and thank goodness, because I don't know if you're like, this is funny. For those that, you know, you get a little water. I mean, you know, PPs get tracked around all over the place, right? You take them to the pool sometimes, or even to the beach, or you, whatever. And, you know, they get a little dog-eared. Dog-eared I can deal with. When they get wet, or when they spill, when the little coffee spill, I got to go back and... little OCD action, I think, right? Is that what is that the explanation? I guess so. All right, let's not dally. There's a lot to do. As we said yesterday, leading in after the Wednesday draw for Turfway, particularly and Gulfstream, there's a lot of work to do. With Oaklawn and last week with Fairgrounds, giving you a full week, it really helps, to be honest. And I want to at least look at even some of the races that you might not bet, the early part of the card. For instance, at Gulfstream, you got a 10 claimer to start the day. But the Orchid and the Cutler Bay are the third and fifth, so you got a couple of the stakes. I'll say this, after making the suggestion and, considering where we've been all winter and now into spring, the concept that these big Saturdays have been somewhat chalky, I'll say this. I think I found some horses to bet tomorrow at Gulfstream, and which I'm happy with. Then there's a couple of places where, you're going to obviously deal with short-priced favorites and likely winners, like a Kathleen O in the Gulfstream Oaks, and even if you look elsewhere, Goddess of Fire is, the near second choice. There's actually a horse in there that's interesting at a price. I don't know as a win candidate, but in a lot of these races, I ended up kind of approaching some of the obvious places, like, for instance, the Florida Derby itself. I have a hard time getting past Simplification. And, I unabashedly have been a fan. Looking around, though, there are prices. There's a price that is going to intercede in the top finish, in the top pay slots in that Florida Derby. There's just too many candidates that have hints of ability in the spot to not be second, third, fourth, or maybe second and third, or third and fourth, or second and fourth. I'll be surprised if we get, if we get to 6:42 at Saturday night, tomorrow night, and you ended up with Simplification and all the obvious, White Abario and Classic Causeway and Charge It. Those are your four favorites, and I don't see all four. I find White Abario and Classic Causeway exceedingly vulnerable in here, and I want to play off the Simplification with prices, including Strike Hard, who we were ready to bet at Tampa. Oh, Captain is going to come, running late. And actually, the more I looked at Bobby DeBona and Steel Sunshine with Lionel Reyes, got a lead from the 11 hole, 30-1. And the 11 hole is not going to destroy Steel Sunshine's chances of impacting that race with a money finish of some kind. So I got kind of excited about the way the Florida Derby is going to unfold. I'm excited to talk to Mike. Let me give you the lineup, because I actually, a lot of times I'll look at Mike's selections. You know, certainly by the time he joins us, I'll get it and have it in front of me. But I haven't seen what his preferences are. So that'll be an interesting conversation. It'll come at the top of hour three. Mike Welch got a very strong lineup of Daily Racing Form correspondents, America's Turf Authority, since Marty McGee is not going to be with us today. Marty next week for Keeneland opener. Marty's back in Kentucky, and Dave Grenick came down to Florida with Marty ending his winter season at Hallandale. But Jay Pribman will join us in the second half hour this morning, and of course, follow-up conversation to the visit on Monday with Jay when he recapped Fairgrounds. So we don't have to spend any time with Jay this morning talking the Louisiana Derby. Marcus Hirsch. Hawthorne is opening. And so not only do we get game plan with Marcus, we'll get his usually three races in the DRF game plan. So we'll get some opinions from Marcus. But also, we'll set the season stage at Hawthorne. Nicole Russo. I at first I thought Nicole was not going to be able to, we weren't going to be able to get to Nicole. Then it occurred to me, just doing some reading, that Nicole is doing the coverage of Turfway tomorrow. She did all the advance work, and she is doing all the reporting. So we'll get Nicole's view of Turfway. I'm sure Scully will be in between Marcus and Nicole. I'm confident, let's say that James will have looked at some of the Turfway action. And I think I was hinting at this yesterday. All things considered, not with Terry Gross, but all things considered, Turfway has maybe the best card of these three big cards. I suppose you'll side on the Gulfstream side because you get turf and dirt. And there actually even is, there's one all-weather maiden race, the fourth. But so you get the variety. You know, obviously at Turfway, it's all synthetic, and at Oaklawn, it's all dirt. So, you know, for the sake of variety, you like the Gulfstream card for that. You know, you got a couple of miles, you had, 3 mile turf stakes and the two longer distances. There's a lot of interesting pedigree stuff going on too for those of us that are pedigree interested, pedigree nerds. After Nicole Russo, Mike Welch has promised Nick Tamaro. We'll get to Nick in hour three. I don't know if you heard, but Nick is the new announcer, the new track announcer at Sam Houston Race Park. I guess there was some question about that last night on Twitter. And we'll round things out with Papo and get some form to win plays. And I actually pulled up some form to win charting, and at least based on the distances that I used for configuration, didn't seem like there was too many surprises. But we'll see what and I didn't do everything. I haven't done the Oaklawn forming to win. So we'll see what Papo's got for us in hour three. We couldn't talk to him earlier in the week. So there it is. Rick Hammerly, of course, is going to start us off momentarily, actually. I'm not going to go running off into too many directions, although I will say thanks to Rich Eng. Rich ran second at Gulfstream and had that winner at Oaklawn. So one for two. And they were, you know, they were kind of short prices, but you know, it still gave you something to do with that was productive, right? And beyond that, you know what? I don't think we need to. Yeah, the rest of it is stuff that can wait till Monday, I think. All right. So I think we're going to just get started because there's too many fun races to handicap. And I think we want all opinions. Nicole will give us a quick overview on the sale. We'll get her sale recapping as well when she joins us. But we're going to start things out at Oaklawn, and Hammer standing by. Rick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Great. I'm great. I'm excited about tomorrow. The one thing that's going to make it a little tricky, they want to get Turfway, get those lights going again, and get a night car, because you're going to have all three of these cars running kind of, you know, it's going to be rapid fire.
Oh, even later in the day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, not even later. Not even that later. I mean, Turfway starts at 12:45 Eastern. You guys start at 1:10, and Gulfstream starts at 11:30. I mean, it's a full day.
I didn't realize the Turfway intervention there.
Yeah.
Because I know we've had discussions with Florida trying to, you know, stay off each other and all that. And, you know, just so everybody knows, we're trying. You know, we, meaning everybody's trying, and things happen during the day where, you know, maybe we'll get a race run at the same time. But we do talk to each other during the day and try and do the best that we can to stay off each other. So we're already talking. So it's not a, it's not like we're just, you know, rolling the dice. Hey, let's run now. Let's run now. We do watch and talk. So we'll hope we can dodge each other, especially for some of the bigger races.
Well, and the course here, so that people have a mental note, sometimes this helps. The Arkansas Derby goes off at 6:35 Eastern. The Florida Derby, 6:38 Eastern. And the Jeff Ruby at 6:23. So these races are going off within 15 minutes of each other.
Well, we go off, 6:35 Central.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, 6:35 Central. You're right, because that's right, because the New York, the Fox show is going to be on until like 8:30. So that you guys help spread things out a little bit. Yes.
Yeah, you scared me there for a second when you said that. So yes, I had a look. It's 6:35 Central. So hopefully we can something here. And this is, you were here, when you were here 6-7 weeks ago, it was, you know, 10, 20 degrees in the morning and nothing. Today, they had a frost warning because it was going to be 30. So I said, where do they come up with that all of a sudden?
Jeez.
But so it's a beautiful morning here. In fact, I'm up in the press box and the sun is shining through here like a headlight on a northbound train. And I have to have my back to the window. It's so strong. But it's a beautiful morning. They got the tents set up in the infield. In the northern part of the infield, I mean, there's got to be 20 tents out there. So you're expecting a huge crowd. A lot of groups have rented out the tents, and it's going to be a big day. I still, to this day, I don't know where people park. All these people park that come here and find their way into the track. And so it's going to be fun. It might be a tad of rain before everybody gets up tomorrow morning, and then should be, knock on wood, should be fine throughout the day in the 60s. So that's all you can ask for. And as we get going here, it's April Fool's Day, and I tried to get a few things going here. I don't know, they're not that big to April Fools around here, so we kind of let that go. But I used to trying to do a few goofy things. I even went to the donut guy where I get donuts and see if I could have him fill some of the strawberry donuts with ketchup, and he didn't get it, so I said, ah, screw it. But that was one of the better things I've ever seen, if somebody brought a dozen donuts into Santa Anita, put them on the counter, and The strawberries were filled with ketchup and the custard was filled with mayonnaise. And to sit and watch people take one and then take that first bite and watch their reaction was pretty good. And then if they took a second bite, it was like, wow, this guy's ripping in for
some people eat mayonnaise with a spoon. So they may have hit.
It was classic. But anyway, we're glad to get into April. And because you know, historically, the Arkansas Derby meant need over when it was 3 weeks out from the Kentucky Derby and before the longer schedule. That was the final day of the meet. And so it's kind of a weird feeling for some of the locals here as we're running the Derby April 2nd, and we still got a month to go, over a month to go in the meet. So you could tell it's just a little different feel around for that. But first year, 5 weeks out, and I think it's turned out to be a good move.
Well, there's still, you know, there's still some big racing, including, what, three weeks away from things like the Oakland Handicap and the Apple Blossom. And in the meantime, the 3-year-olds take the stage tomorrow, plus that Oaklawn Mile, which came up really good. Hammer, let's start in on this Arkansas Derby and work our way backwards. Although I will remind people and let people be aware, the 13th race tomorrow is the anchor leg of the Pick 4 and Pick 5. So the sequences don't end with the Arkansas Derby. You got to look at this Arkansas bred allowance, where it feels like Asmussen with Chicken Hawk and Westerman with Bellamy's Roan, they feel pretty much like the major pair. Plus, maybe I'm a Bling Cat with Brogberg taking over. So maybe you can get away with two or three in that nightcap. But what's the Arkansas Derby thoughts with the filly capturing all the headlines?
Yeah, you know, I think the filly being in here gives a real, real good storyline, and I think everything just happened to where she's running in the Arkansas Derby, and it's not a weird move, a strange move. It's the move, especially for Wayne to have the horse and to already have the Oaks, the points lined up, and hey, what are you gonna do? And, you know, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I mean, I think right now, if you had to ask him, if whatever happens after the Arkansas Derby, I think they are leaning towards the Kentucky Oaks. But, you know, they're doing it one race at a time. Like you said, the purse is double. I'm here. I fit. I've done it before. And, you know, with Althea in 1984, Lucas did pull this off. And it kind of sits in her lap. And I'll tell you what. You know, going up and down and over and around the race. I think the way the race sets up with plenty of horses that look like there's going to be some pace in front. I mean, it really kind of falls in her lap. I'm trying to find, right?
Yeah, it does. It does.
I'm trying to, you know, work around and try some horses get. I think she's the horse to beat. There's some newcomers in here. You know, we have a lot of the horses that have run in some of the previous races, which, you know, we have to question just how strong those races really were. Kavad from Into Rail, I mean, he was fourth in all the preps. Didn't run bad, didn't get to strays, just good enough to try the next one. And then, you know, runs good, decent again. And, you know, ran, only got beat a couple lengths last time and carried the field, you know, deep into the stretch. So, I mean, you got to try him again. Chasing Time, you know, only won a couple races, first time in the Rebel last time. He ran okay. I mean, maybe he's going to get better, but does that do it? Barber Road, he's the interesting one to me. He's running all the preps as well. There's the Smarty Jones, the Southwest, the Rebel, pretty much run the identical race every single time. He's finished second twice and third last time and was, you know, looked like he was closing at the end, had trouble finding a hole. Just one of those horses that maybe one time he's going to get his perfect setup and be able to run him down late. So I'm not tossing him entirely. Doppelganger comes in for Tim Yakteen. Saw Tim yesterday and, you know, we're just kind of talking a little bit. And this horse is in for his fourth start, coming off of San Felipe where he literally just chased Forbidden Kingdom around there. Made a nice middle move. To only made up a few lengths in the stretch and was eased up at the finish line, got a nice figure out of the race. So he is the invader that has the question mark. And we've seen, you know, some horses like this come in from the West Coast over the years and do very well in these races. You know, he broke his maiden ninth flat. So he can be up close to the pace. Find it interesting that, you know, he comes out of a race where they ran three quarters and 10-2 And the Rebel three quarters was running 14-1. So, I mean, whether how that compares, I don't know, but which leads me to believe it's going to be a little bit quicker pace up front. Unojo comes in off the 75-1 shocker last time in the Rebel. And, you know, a lot of these horses that were up front, even Ethereal Road, the pace was very slow. So they had some of these horses that were in front turning for home because they were going so slow early, just stayed there at the end. Unojo got a room at the rail and got it done. Secret Oath, we'll talk about her a little bit more later. Ben Diesel, of course, is always the upset special when Dallas Stewart's involved in one of these races. He is that guy that, you know, if you use five horses and you're going to use the sixth, he was the sixth. So I don't know. He always gets involved in these races. Now we come to the two horses on the outside, the allowance horses. They've won all their allowance races. Interestingly enough, they run the fastest times going a mile and 16th coming into here. Cyberknife, he won an allowance race at the fairgrounds. It's running in the Derby here in Arkansas. And last week we had the Arkansas allowance horse winner Zozos running the Louisiana Derby. Kind of interesting there. And We the People, the international good thing that paid $9 first time out. He was the most talked about horse on the backside since we got here. He's done nothing but show that to be untrue. And interestingly enough, both of those horses are now going to be off Lasix. And, you know, I was talking to a trainer about that, about how Lasix has kind of slowed down some of the times just around the country. And I wonder, you know, what kind of role the Lasix is going to have with these two guys. I've noticed that in this race, there's been eight starts of horses when they were on Lasix, and they won seven of them. Pretty wild, including two by We the People and two by Cyberknife. So they're going to be running off Lasix. I don't know what kind of effect that has, but it's sad that I even have to think about how that's going to enter into the handicapping. We the People, he's going to have some effect on there. He's going to be on the outside, probably going to have to be forced to show a little bit of his speed and to get some position. But, you know, I think all in all, when it's all said and done, I'm not going to rock this boat. I think Secret Oath is going to find a way to get that middle move done and be in the right place at the right time in the stretch and just be able to run him down.
Well, I think Contreras will be maybe a little bit more cognizant after what happened in the Honey Bee about being, you know, too far inside. Being, you know, launching from the six hole will give him a little bit more option to, you know, try to avoid getting pocketed. He might even give up some ground just to give her more options and room to operate. And of course, she also does get an extra half of a furlong going the mile and the eighth. You don't have to worry about the short stretch. So, but I got a feeling that he will try to keep her out of Adam harm's way. It's a great storyline, and we'll see. Let it play out, and we'll deal with the outcome afterward. Let's back up into a few other spots, Rick. We'll stay with the stakes for a minute. People can scratch Ita, the Baffert filly, out of the fantasy, leaves a group of eight, and it certainly will change the betting pattern. And like a horse like Dream Lith on the rail for Diodoro, 8-1. You probably can anticipate half of that. Cox on the outside with Bubble Rock. You got that Ugiri. We talked to Asmussen the other morning about getting Magic Circle from Jose Singer. May turn out that she probably, I think, is probably a one-turn type. But anyway, some thoughts about this fantasy group.
Yeah, you know, it's just a group of horses here. I mean, I don't know what's been, you know, what's even out there after the race we saw in Louisiana last week. Those two look pretty good. Whether any of these match up with them, I'm not real sure. I you know, Bubble Rock, never run on dirt, so that's a question. Figures wise, he's looking to move forward. You know, originally I was looking for some of the outsiders here, and obviously Ida was one of them, and. But Magic Circle, the filly you just mentioned from the Asmussen barn, you know, stake winner, won the Bassanda, didn't run bad in the Demoiselle, comes back. You know, I the numbers kind of fit with her. I give her a decent shot in here. like I said, the local ones not really jumping on board with. I looked at, you always got to be scared, afraid of Brad Cox in these things. Sometimes he sneaks in there at a decent price. And Mariah's Fortune ran decent in allowance race again at the fairgrounds, brings her back over here. She did break her maiden here, 1/8. It was in the slot, but Flavian Pratt, who's in town, jumps on board. And, you know, a horse like that could upset Rudy Brissett, the next horse out. Ugiri, you know, ran in the Honey Bee and the Gold Rod and ran decent, still only won one race. But, you know, I guess, like I said, you look at Bubble Rock and Magic Circle, I'd probably circle around there. But interesting event. You know, Dream Lift comes back for Diodoro. Unless I remember, Robertino, after that slump, has really been on a little bit of a roll here. Seems to have been placing his horses in the right spot. Decided long ago that he was going to, after the Rachel, was going to run in this spot. And it looks like he made a good decision. He's got a great figure when he won the Goldenrod. She won the Goldenrod last time. So, you know, and Vasquez, who's moving his tack to California after this weekend, is on board. And he's done very well in stake races here. So, you know, 8-1 on her, that's going to drop dramatically. But she could be a play at a decent price, too.
Talk about the Oaklawn Mile, which really has become a... It has become seemingly a race with some mojo. And Cezanne comes in for Baffert. You got Urton showing up, as well as Michael W. McCarthy. We talked to the other day about Law Professor. Brad Cox, get Folsom back in here. How about Roadster, who feels like he's been around for 10 years. Diodoro, 12-1 on market analysis caught my attention. I mean, Cezanne is the horse to beat, but 12-1, I want to work market analysis in.
Yeah, I don't see how you can't with like we said, how good he's been doing, and this horse obviously likes Oaklawn. Not a bad deal for the fourth running of this race. Decided to add a few extra weeks to the end of the meet, a couple of years ago, had to come up with a couple stakes, and this, you know, there's no turf, you have to, let's see, well, we got a modest, let's try a mile. And so the Oaklawn Mile, the $400,000 purse, kind of is, I mean, there's not another spot like this out there right now. So this race came up really good, competitive. I mean, running Ray on the rail for Joe Sharp has really shown his affinity for Oaklawn here too, running good. And let's remember, it's a short stretch of the mile run. So they beginning and end of the 16th pole. So you really want to have a horse that's going to be forwardly placed turner for home as a rule. You know, you lose that extra 16th of a mile of the stretch here where a lot of stuff does happen. But market analysis, you mentioned, you know, went back and watched a couple of these last time out. Cezanne, of course, it's got to be the horse to beat. I mean, it just kind of looks like he has mile written all over him. We'll see what the two turns does. He handled it well at Los Al way back when, but, you know, we got to try and beat him. Roadster, you know, I can't believe he's six now. He's only had 14 starts. So obviously he's had some problems here and there. Comes back under Mike Stidham. You know, might want to watch one first. Silver Prospector, who was, you know, a couple years ago, is a really, really competitive type of horse. I think this distance is right for him. I think he really showed improvement last time in the mineshaft, running second to Olympiad, who's turned out to be a real, real nice horse. I'd take a look at him a little bit. Where else we got on the oh? And then you mentioned Law Professor. Necker Island's a tough one. Runs good every time. You know, and Chris Hartsman's had a good meet too. I look at Law Professor. Anytime Michael McCarthy ships anywhere, you know, he really knows how to place them. And he actually talked about this horse when we were talking about when he came back and won with CeCe earlier in the meet. And he said, I think about bringing Law Professor that mile. And lo and behold, he shows up here. And he's done pretty good. He got that off the turfer, won the Mathis Brothers mile there, and run a good second to Express Train, who probably the best older horse in California at the time. Tried the turf, didn't do so bad. Law Professor going a mile. If he's anywhere near 8-1, there's Johnny V on him. They're putting the blinkers on him, which means to me they're on go. I'm giving this horse a shot here.
Hammer, I'm going to have to wrap, but you got the carousel early on the card. Frank's Rocket looks very tough, although Lil Tootsie and Joy's Rocket, Asmussen seem to be excited about Joy's Rocket coming back in this spot. And I do want to ask you for one opinion if you've looked at the race. The eighth, I've got seven horses highlighted. Absolutely, you know, crazed. A six furlong allowance that is murder.
You know, I tried to guess which races you were going to ask about. I didn't look at that one.
All right.
Norm Cassidy went too. Now, Norm Cassidy's horse, he's starting to catch fire here. He won the stake last week. He won two races yesterday. He's got AC Expressway in here. I do have a little mark by him. He ran second last time. Giroux gets on board here, so I did have a little mark by him, AC Expressway. Real quickly, Jimmy DeVito, who does not participating in the stakes, has three horses in tomorrow, one in the second, Kunshan Bridge, which is named after the longest bridge in the world. That's a first-time starter. Keep an eye on him. He's got Life is Hard in the third, who it's an allowance race, coming off a win last time. And he's got Plausible Denial back in for coming back quick.
Yeah.
As a maiden, we liked him last time in the sixth race. We'll give him another shot going along. So keep your eye on Jimmy DeVito. I think he's got some live horses in some of the other races. And, you know, hope you guys, we try to put together a very competitive card of allowance races and maidens and stakes here for y'all. And hope you enjoy it and tune us in and, you know, for the Arkansas Derby and all the other races around it.
Full coverage on Fox tomorrow of the card at Oaklawn, all the way through actually to that 13th race, to that Arkansas Bred allowance.
Right.
Hammer, we'll catch up during the day tomorrow. I appreciate it.
All right, one quick deal. Gulfstream, Florida Derby. I'm looking at Strike Hard a little bit. You scratched out of Tampa Bay. I think I've been waiting for this horse as a bomb, so I'm going to use him in some of the underneath stuff. So anyway, good luck to Florida. Good luck to here, and let's have a great day of racing tomorrow and Turfway.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go on your Twitter machine, and away we go. And actually, we're going to come right back to Hot Springs because Jay Pribman has been there this week as Jay's tour continues. Last week in New Orleans, and this week at Oaklawn. So we're going to get Jay with not just the opinion there, but also, of course, we'll get Jay's thoughts on the Florida Derby. And don't know if he's got much. Turfway. We got to talk about Turfway as well. But the Arkansas Derby is the number one priority, and Jay has been bringing you coverage all week from early in the morning when the horses hit the track straight through till tomorrow night. Jay Pribman, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. It's been a fun week knowing that we were going to have this mammoth Saturday from Hot Springs to Hallandale to Florence, y'all.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about, since we talked last on Monday, what's transpired and what do we need to know?
They're running three prep races Saturday for, you know, Derby runners.
Nice. Nice. And let's anticipate how much shakeup it could make to you and Marty McGee's Derby watch. Jay, talk about the filly and Dwayne Lucas and Bryland Farm and Secret Oath in the Arkansas Derby.
Yeah, so she's the morning line favorite for the race here tomorrow, and had a nice discussion with Wayne about the whole situation. He said, you know, still the Oaks is the more likely race that she ends up in, but let's get through tomorrow and see where they're at. You know, it's really just sort of an opportunity. She's 3 for 3 over this track, so and the race is worth more than twice as much money as the fantasy for fillies. You know, she stacks up well on figs against the group of males that are in against her tomorrow. And she's got 5 weeks till the next race if it turns out this is too big an ask for. So 5 weeks to recover, you know, till the Oaks or the Derby. So he just thought, looking at just the totality of the situation, this was worth a roll. It's also a grade one, and she's never won a grade one, whereas the fantasy's a grade three. So there's just a lot of things about this specific situation that made the Arkansas Derby an appealing option as opposed to the fantasy this weekend, and then we'll see what happens from there. He told me that, you know, one route might be to do sort of the Rachel Alexandra route of going to the Kentucky Oaks and then maybe jumping into the Triple Crown Trail at the Preakness. But, you know, first things first, let's see how she does tomorrow. And then, you know, if she wins by five and gets a buyer of 102, I think you might see her at the Derby. If she struggles to win and the thing comes back 89, maybe not, you know, or if she's fourth or something. So we'll, you know, we'll see. But I think she deserves, based on all the options that there are, and all the, you know, the risk reward ratio pencils out better to go for it.
Sometimes when we get this, it you know, it's a horse that's got a chance. In this case, I mean, she's got the target on her back, and she comes in with the best, really looking the best on paper.
Right. Oh, she's 3 for 3 here, and when they ran the Honey Bee and the Rebel on the same card last month, she ran almost a full second faster. So I think the running against the horses that were in the Rebel, she certainly looks like she's got them beat. It's some of the newcomers to this series that are going to be the more interesting ones. We the People, Cyberknife, horses like that.
Well, flesh it out, Jay, for your, you know, for our purposes, for ticket punching and possible upsetters, and who's viable.
I don't know about ticket punting. It's not a great gambling race. I prefer Cyberknife, but I think he's going to get bet down. I thought the line on the race was not of reality. There's no way he's going to be a higher price than Un Ojo or the same price as Barbara Road. That's just not going to happen. But I do think he's a progressive horse who has gotten over some of the immaturity that he had shown earlier, and I think he's going to take some beating tomorrow. And you know, We the People's lightly raced, but he's got a tremendous amount of talent. I think he'll run well too. I like Barber Road. I just don't know if he's fast enough, but he'll be running late. And I thought he might have been best in the Rebel. He didn't have the cleanest of trips that day, but that was not a fast race. And this race will be, he'll have to step up to prevail, I think, against this group tomorrow.
One thing we should touch on, Jay, because it'll come up here over the next, not just today and this weekend, but certainly going forward, Doppelganger and Tim Yakteen. In fact, Hammer just mentioned seeing Tim on the grounds. Some thoughts about how to approach these horses that are going to be with Rudy Brissett and Tim Yakteen these next couple of weekends.
Right, so the Doppelganger had been trained by Baffert up until just, you know, a week ago. And, you know, Yakteen is very familiar with the operation, I'm sure. There wasn't a whole lot for him to do for this race, just give him a breeze and go. I think he's a nice horse. I'm just not quite sure if he's – I don't think he's as good, for instance, as Bessier. He ran well, I thought, against Forbidden Kingdom last time, but he was closer to Forbidden Kingdom at the top of the stretch than he was at the end of the race. So I think he's a good, solid horse, but I think there's a little more upside, in my mind, to Cyberknife and We the People, and that's why I prefer them a little bit to over Doppelganger tomorrow.
The Arkansas Derby rounds out the troika of preps. Let's stay with the three-year-olds and go to Florida and get your thoughts going into the Florida Derby.
You know, good solid race. It seems like it's a haves and a have-nots. There's like four that are really good, and then, you know, quite a few that are just kind of reaching for the stars. I'm kind of interested to see what they do with Classic Causeway, because to me, his approach to this race, by my way of looking at it, should be similar to what they did with Epicenter last week. He already has enough points to run in the Kentucky Derby, and we know that he can lead from start to finish. So this might be a good race to experiment and see if he can sit. The problem is that he usually breaks so well, he'll probably be out, and he's drawn inside, he'll probably end up on the lead anyway.
Right.
But it'd be a good spot to try and give him some schooling like they did with Epicenter last week and hope it works out and at least give him that experience beforehand. If he leads from start to finish, I don't know how much he would gain from it. There's several others in here with good, solid qualifications. Simplification has run really good series of races there, and he was best last time after having a really troubled trip in his race before that. White Abario has overcome interrupted training to win his last start, and he had a less compromised situation coming into this race, and Mike Welsh said his work the other day was really sharp, so I would expect him to run well. And I know that Pletcher's been extremely high on Charge It, who's obviously lightly raced and taking a giant jump up in class, but I like where he drew. I think he can get a good trip from out there, and I don't think he's without a chance. But, you know, those are the four top choices on the morning line, and so I'm not really giving you anything too creative here from a wagering standpoint. And I just think those four are vastly superior to everybody else in the race.
Well, and I introduced the show actually with kind of a similar thought. I think there is a chance for kind of an interloper for exotic purposes, but I think it'd be a surprise if somebody other than the obvious players get a blanket of orchids. The Florida Derby, 6:38 p.m. And then we look at Turfway, and obviously with Churchill's involvement, Jay, at Turfway Park, the Jeff Ruby has gotten purse bump, and it has gotten a point bump, so it's going to play into the Derby starting gate. Some thoughts about this group?
Not a whole lot, other than just whoever runs 1-2 is going to have enough points to run in the race and potentially knock somebody else out. You know, Tis the Bomb is certainly the horse to beat. McPeak has said all along that I did a story on him a couple of weeks ago, and he just said that their goal is to go over to England and run in 1,000 guineas and then the Epsom, 2,000 guineas for Colts, and then the Epsom Derby. So that's still the plan, and to run in the 2,000 guineas, you would not be able to do that at the Kentucky Derby. So you'd have to give that up to run in the Kentucky Derby. You could certainly run in the Kentucky Derby and then go to the Epsom Derby, but I don't know that that's something that would be in the best interest of Tis the Bomb. He clearly looks like he's better on grass or synthetic, and dirt not quite as much. And I think this is an opportune situation for them to go ahead and run here for that kind of money on synthetic, which we know he likes, having won the Taglia. But I don't know that he's gonna, even if he wins, I don't know that he would use the points to go on to the Kentucky Derby. But anybody else who runs 1-2, it's gonna, they're horses that are gonna have spots in the gate. Those spots are now being taken up by the UAE Derby winner and other horses that are gonna be big long shots that are gonna be in the gate and might knock somebody else out.
Should mention too, Marty McGee earlier this morning with the Rudy Brissett news with Black Adder, who you can take out of the Ruby and who's going to wait till next week and run in the Bluegrass. So now up to about, I think, 9 or 10 potentially for the Bluegrass. Don't know if Pletcher will go ahead and run Swing Shift, who was an AE. Maybe we'll reach out to Todd and see if that's a story, or because that horse actually is okay. Jay, we talked Monday about the Louisiana Derby because you were right on hand, and then later in the day you posted your recaps of the UAE Derby, and you mentioned the starting gate for Kentucky, and also Sunland too, and one of the Sunland runner up, Bye Bye Bobby, became a late nominee, Todd Fincher trainee, and then we heard that the runner-up out of Maidan, also a late nominee that is going to consider the Derby.
Right, summer is tomorrow, and so, yeah, I mean, if he comes over, he's got 40 points. You know, the UA Derby winners already come over. You know, so they're long shots. They're not horses that I would take too seriously, but they're horses that are going to take up spots, and that's going to make these last round of preps really interesting in terms of who's going to have enough points to get in.
Well, and for instance, the Bye Bye Bobby Fincher with that late nomination, mentioning that he's going to contest the Lexington. Kent DeSormo told you the other day about Call Me Midnight as well.
That was Keith DeSormo, by the way.
Excuse me, Keith DeSormo. McPeak had already talked, I guess, Dash Attack in that direction. So the Lexington could end up, even though it's just 28, 4, and 2 points, could have an impact. And we'll go from there.
Yep, no, that'll be the last one of the series.
Well, the next week, the Wood, of course, and the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby. Certainly, Jay, are you going? You're going to go home, obviously, for after this.
Yes.
Excellent.
All right. I will be at the Santa Anita Derby.
Outstanding. Right now, Forbidden Kingdom, Messier, McLaren Vale, Happy Jack, and Win the Day. We talked to Doug O'Neill the other day. Jay, we'll get you out there. I know horses, you got an opportunity during the Harrow break. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy it, and thanks so much for the terrific coverage this week.
All right, thanks, Steve, very much.
Jay Bribman, everybody, DRF Bribman, and the Derby Watch gets you set for the big weekend. Coming up toward the top of the hour, and we actually got I can make a decision here. We can actually, let me see. I could go to Marcus. I think we're going to do that, and we'll take the one break after we talk to Marcus Hirsch. So we'll press on because Jay had a very tight window there this morning. So let's reach for Marcus, because actually got quite a bit to do with Marcus. He'll have the game plan options, and as I mentioned, Hawthorne is going to start the not just the thoroughbred racing season in Chicagoland, but they'll be alternating with the season for the standardbreds as well, and this new landscape to deal with at Hawthorne. All right, we struck out first here with Marcus. And we'll, there we go. All right. Give Marcus a second. Let me see if there was anything else from Oaklawn, because that 40 minutes was the lion's share of the Oaklawn coverage. I'm glad that Hammer mentioned Jimmy DeVito, plausible denial, who we were all kind of locked into, going back to even to the debut. I'd liked him in the debut. Jimmy's going to give him first Lasix now and add blinkers as well to the package. And Johnny, with Johnny Velasquez in town, Johnny picks up the mount. But there's really all the obvious players in here in this, that King Ottoman from Asmussen right next door, Three Chimneys, that was okay in a mile and a 16th debut in February. Got beat two lengths at Fairgrounds. So I think King Ottoman, second Curlin out of, this is a Three Chimneys homebred. I thought King Ottoman was okay. 5-1. And Western River for Brissett, moving a little bit outside. He's been, came back as a first-time three-year-old and got beat just three quarters out of that Curly Tail Life on the Nile race in February. So Western River's okay, 4-1. And Commander Compton for Phil Bauer makes a 3-year-old debut here. Congrats. A Clarkland bred for Mr. Rigney. Blinkers come off. Lasix goes on. Interesting. Commander Compton, I thought, had a reason in here. This is that sixth race that starts the middle pick four, and I'll give you that information. There's, in addition to the early pick five and pick four, starting in races 1 and 2 at Oaklawn, there's also a middle pick five and pick four. The carousel, the fifth, kicks off that pick five in the middle of the card, fifth through the ninth. So starts with the carousel, ends with the mile. And then it's got this maiden race in. It's got a money allowance where that horse that the Asmussen horse that we talked about with Steve, Pharaoh's Heart, she comes back. Let's see if she can keep her head together on Saturday. Well spent on the outside for Deodoro. Felt like the two you could get through. But as I told you, this eighth race is absolutely, I am not somebody that pushes all buttons, but boy, oh boy. Once you get over four or five horses, if you can't separate, if you can't separate half the field, that's a tough sign to deal with. So the eighth is the, the very tricky, really the maiden race and that eighth are the two races that are the tricky part of this middle pick five. And I'm going to write up 5 through 13 tomorrow at Oaklawn. And then I'm hard-pressed not to, do plenty of the Gulfstream action as well. So those will be the two focuses. And frankly, with four races out of five in the Naira Betts cross country, the only race you have to look at other than Oaklawn is the Excelsior at Aqueduct. So we'll talk to Nick Tamaro. Feels like Todd's got a pair in there, and Uriah St. Louis has got forewarned, but that might be might not be the other. Actually, let me tell you those races too while I'm thinking of it. The Carousel starts the cross country, then the Excelsior, and then the three big stakes at Oaklawn. The Mile, the Fantasy, and the Derby. That's the cross-country pick five. And the Carousel goes off at 3:19 Eastern. All right? So, the only other thing that we didn't cover with Hammer. No, that's it. That really is it. All right, so we'll put Oaklawn. I imagine we'll get a couple of Oaklawn plays from James Scully as well. All right, let me see if we can't raise Marcus here and get going with him. I dig around for the Hawthorne info. Little too much I've got PPs that, well, I told you there was 40 races between all right, well, if we can't get Marcus going here right now, then I think I don't want to waste too much more time here. Let's see about, we can get Nicole and get Nicole in here or not. Unbelievable. Wow. All right. Well, in another second case, we'll end up taking that top of the hour break and coming back. All right. If we can't get either one of these. For now. The other option
is James.
And you know what? That's what we're going to do. Because I'm surprised. Marcus said he had a light morning. So unless he got tied up on something he's working on. So let's see about slipping James in here in this spot instead. And that'll get us rolling into hour two. And I think we got James Scully. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
James, I jumped to you because Marcus, not picking up, so.
All right, no worries at all. Yeah, it's going to be a huge weekend. Really excited for this weekend with these three Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks major prep races. And then, you know, next week is the same thing where we have another big three pack ahead. So the next 2 weeks, huge for the Derby scene. Obviously, we had a couple last week in Epicenter. I thought ran huge in Louisiana Derby. Displayed a new dimension. He had perhaps had been on the lead every step of the way in his first five starts, but he had never sat behind horses and taken kickback. And the race came back fast as well. He got a 101 Brisnet speed rating. He's one of the only three horses to do so this year, Steve, with Messier and Forbidden Kingdom. And those two Southern California rivals both had everything their own way on the front end. So we'll see what happens going forward when they actually have to face pressure. So I thought it was a very impressive performance. Steve Asmussen, 0-21 in the Derby. His first starter came way back in 2001. And, you know, he's going to do everything he can to try to win it this year.
Well, and I didn't want to ask him, and I didn't want to be, you know, one of the people that harasses him with this question. But I did say on Monday, do you feel at, you know, this point, 6 weeks out that you're going to be going postward with your best shot? And he kind of acknowledged that, he thinks that it's as good a shot as any that he's brought over. So,
yeah, and I think anyway, depending on what happens over these next six races, or at least five of them, with the Florida Derby, Arkansas Derby, Wood, Bluegrass, and Santa Anita Derby, a horse or two could, you know, make a case for favoritism. But there's no doubt that Epicenter is going to be in the top three wagering choices. And I can understand as well Asmussen because he has Morello running in the Wood Memorial, so he doesn't want to shade that horse at all. And that horse looks pretty good. We'll see how he handles two turns. But Epicenter is the real deal. I think you could make a case he's his strongest Kentucky Derby contender yet, Steve.
Well, we'll see how everybody lines up. What was, as you said, and as everybody's acknowledged, the fact that he was able to sit comfortably, stalk and go at will, and I mean, just, I know push button, you know, push button speed and all that is it's trite, but that was about as perfect a, you know, a approach that you're going to find. And then, you know, there's also the part to reiterate, James, about 9.5 furlongs and the fact that, you know, every indication, you know, you win at the Preakness distance and, you know, you're 110 yards away. So a lot to like.
Yeah, Fairgrounds extended those distances 3 years ago. And I think really over the last 2 years, last year and this year, they've gotten better, deeper fields. Hot Rod Charlie finished third, but eventually played second in the Derby after winning last year's Louisiana Derby. And we'll see how Epicenter fares.
I don't know if you heard how much of the show you've heard the last couple of days, but, I've kind of railed a little bit against the critique that I've seen. I'm not going to like Epicenter for the Derby because he's gotten perfect trips. It's like you got to be kidding. First of all, that we haven't had a horse come from off the pace anyway since Orb in a collapse scenario. But you'd rather have a horse that's going to have to deal with traffic of, I don't know, 6, 8, 12, 14 horses, you'd prefer that to a horse that can sit with the fay lengths, yeah, and the bay setters?
Everybody talks about since the point system was installed in 2013 that you don't get these pure sprinters in the race, all this speed, because, you know, those sprint races, that those are earnings where points races now be longer. But in 2013, of course, you had Thomas Malice with the blinkers. He ran off, like, just show pure speed, like a 6-4-long sprinter, set the table for Orb. And I'll even say that in 2016 and in 2018, you know, both Nyquist and Justify are both sitting off of these future graded stakes winning sprinters, Promises Fulfilled and Dancing Candy. And they're going to have no problem sitting a couple lengths off, or, you know, a length or two off of them. And then, you know, just making their move in the far turn and taking over and winning pretty comfortably.
Any thoughts on what the Sunland race produced and what the race in the Middle East produced?
You know, the race in the Middle East, I find it funny that that runner-up, those connections, they nominated him to the Triple Crown, and they're talking about running him. I'd be surprised to see Crown Pride make any impact, but the runner-up, Summer and Tomorrow, out-sprinted Pinehurst, who was ultra-quick, to the lead in that race. So to me, he ships over for the Derby. There's just another pace element that could really set this race up. You know, there's a lot can happen. We'll see how everything materializes, but it'll be interesting to see with Forbidden Kingdom, Messier, Classic Causeway this Saturday. You just have some classy horses that, you know, haven't shown that dimension to sit off horses and win races. So some of them I don't think are going to change tactics, and they'll be out there winging it from the start in the Derby.
All right, let's dive in. And where do you want to start?
I took a closer look at Oaklawn, so I'll just give some quick thoughts. I thought in the at Gulfstream, I thought in the Florida, I wound up landing on the morning line favorites in both the prep races. I like Kathleen O off of her last race. I think her run style could, you know, be, you know, pretty intriguing for the Oaks, and want to see how she handles two turns, but I think she'll get it done. I like Simplification. I think Classic Causeway, if they had drawn outside of Charge It, I think they probably would have tried to sit just off him. But being in post two, I expect him to, you know, really go from there. And Charge It will be up there as well. And you'll have Simplification, to me, just sitting a good trip just off the speed. And I'm going to go with him. I give him top billing.
I'm with you. I've got no argument. I will, James, flesh out the betting opportunity, because I'm making a case, and I'll write it up later this afternoon and into the evening before I post. But I want to figure out a way to get one of the, you know, the big double digit prices involved, because I think there's a chance that Strike Hard down inside for Matt Williams, O Captain, who has, in fact, somebody, I should have answered, somebody wrote to me on Twitter about O Captain being a potential triple, you know, tri-key type horse, you know, a reverse tri-key, and you know, chunking up for third at a big price. And even Steel Sunshine, to me, James, has got a chance to do that and impact the exotics. How are you, if you're going to key off Simplification as I am, how do you build a ticket?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm throwing White Barrow out. If he runs into money, then he beats me. I'm just trying to beat him in there from the at least the four short prices. I agree with two of those. Oh, Captain, you know, that horse broke his maiden by 9 lengths, and he ran third in the Limehouse. And I make the argument that his best race yet came in the Fountain of Youth. That's his first race at two turns. Carpe Diem, APND Mayor. No reason he couldn't, if he gets this right set up in up front with some speed in her, you know, to me, run third or fourth again and be that kind of try or super fed to key. And Strike Hard is a little intriguing, because he's going to get that ground-saving trip to me. He's going to be sitting in third or fourth, and he could be in position just to hold for a minor award, because with the Sam F. Davis, I'm willing to give him an excuse in that race for just breaking so poorly. I thought his effort in the Mucho Macho Man was solid. You know, I'm not entirely thrilled about, you know, longer distance with him, but he's run, you know, like I said, that race at Sam F. Davis, he actually passed a lot of rivals in the latter stages. So I think he at least has a shot to outperform his odds at 20-1 on the morning line, Strike Hard.
All right, where else?
And then I'll just mention a Turfway in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. You know, you got a lot of horses in there that have all this turf form. One horse, the horse I wound up landing on is number 5, Tawny Port. And, I think he's a horse, he's pretty well bred, cost almost $500,000 at auction. But I don't think Brad Cox and the stable thought, they left him at Turfway over the winter instead of taking him to Fairgrounds and Oaklawn. And I wouldn't say they didn't, expect him to run well, but he won his first start by 6 lengths. He came back and really ran a good race, winning an allowance on January 7th. And I thought in the Risen Star, it looked like he was going to be like last or way up the track down the back stretch. And I thought he actually finished up pretty encouraging considering the environment and how he's really being thrown to the wolves in that spot to pass about half the field for 5th. Brad Cox kept him at Fairgrounds after that, put a sharp half mile work in him, and now has worked in 3 straight times at, at like 5 furlongs. And he appears to be, coming into this race in pretty good order, and he loves the Tapetta. So I'm going to go with Tawny Port to step up and win that race, Steve.
I thought Tawny Port was definitely the option beyond Tis the Bomb, the place to start as an option. I don't know if that 6-1 is going to hold, but
Tis the Bomb and Stolen Base. I mean, obviously they ran well last time, but they're going to get a good setup with. I mean, I think Royal Spirit will be out there. I mean, I even think Cabo's Spirit could get a good setup because I think Royal Spirit's going to show speed from the rail, and then you got a whole bunch of speed in the middle with Great Escape, and then on the outside with Doak Chief and Constitutional Lawyer could be sent a little bit, and I expect a solid pace. It does set up well for off the pace runners.
The Ruby, 6:23 Eastern for the Jeff Ruby.
At Oaklawn, I will start. I'll mention a price horse I like. I think in the it kicks off the late pick 5. Or no, maybe it's the late of 6, but it's race number 8. You referenced it before, how tough you thought this race was, Steve. I was listening earlier. And I think the 4 shortest prices on the morning line, all those potential favorites, are all vulnerable. I thought Martini Blue ran a good race when breaking his maiden. He came to Oaklawn last year. He ran 5th in the Smarty Jones behind Cattle River. Obviously exited the race with something wrong with him. Never worked again after that until this recent December. And his first race back, he got a pretty solid field. He ran 5th in that race. He showed up with front wraps on. The runner-up, Macron, came back and won an allowance. And, he's in later on the program Saturday. And then in that last race on January 29th at entry level allowance, Martini Blue ran 3rd, had no front wraps that day, a really improved effort. Once again, the runner up, Palace Coup, comes right back, wins his next race. He's been running in these races where horses are coming back and winning out of. He's been showing improvement. He's 3rd off the layoff for Robertson. I look for him to run a big race and just off the pace. And Martini Blue's 10-1 on the morning line.
Very nice.
I thought in race number 9, the Oaklawn Mile, Silver Prospectors 8-1, I'll buy your lunch. Because I thought that was just a huge effort last time, running 2nd to Olympiad in the Mine Shaft. He's run well at Oaklawn Park before. I'm giving him top billing in there. I do think the main threat to me, Cezanne, to me, he beat the absolute worst field in the San Carlos last time. And his one bad race before that came at 2 turns. I'm going to let him beat me tomorrow. The other horse I'd use in multi-race wagering from that is Necker Island. I thought that was a legitimate effort. I think Gunnett's going to win early on the card that ran 3rd in that race. And this horse looks like he could be a pretty good 5-year-old for Chris Hartman. So I think the Oaklawn Miles between Silver Prospector and Necker Island.
There you go. So the 6 and the 9, and you mentioned Gunnett. Gunnett is the 5-2 favorite in the 4th race, a $100,000, $108,000 mile for 4 and ups, an optional.
And I know you need me to get off soon. So
no, you're all right. You're okay. You're all right.
In the fantasy, I don't really have a strong opinion. I thought in race number 11, I like Garhole. I thought he would go into Stakes Company. I think he's going to run a big race there for John Ortiz. He's 7-2 in the morning line. Won't get a lot of value with him. And then in the Arkansas Derby, Steve, I will say this. I think that Secret Oath, she won two of her first four starts, maiden and allowance race. I think her last two races were way better than those first two. And it's simply because she has displayed an improved turn of foot, leading the far turns in that race, those races, that is going to serve her extremely well on Saturday. I think it's funny with Elaine Lucas saying about you know, the Oaks is the major goal. I think if this filly doesn't run first or second and winds up in the Oaks, it's a huge disappointment. I don't think that these connections and Lucas are scared of any three-year-old males out there. I'm old enough that I remember in 1988 when Winnie Colors won the Santa Anita Derby, him and being in the winner's circle laughing, asking rhetorically, does anybody think we shouldn't run in the Kentucky Derby now? And I think he's looking forward to asking that same question in the winner's circle Saturday. And I'm going with Secret Oath in the Arkansas Derby.
Yeah, I don't think there's any argument to be made. I mean, not on the Derby front, just in terms of tomorrow. Yeah. Let's start with tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. You got five of the nine horses back from the Rebel, but I really think the four main contenders are, you know, Secret Oath, Doppelganger, Cyberknife, and We the People, the four horses that weren't in that race. And, you know, I think it's a pretty solid, it could be a pretty solid field. They're not proven like the Florida Derby, but horses like Cyberknife and Doppelganger obviously and We the People have something going for them. So I'm excited. I think it could be a good race, a productive race going forward.
No, it should be tremendous fun. And actually, that's a terrific point about the fresh faces, you know, kind of looking, you know, looking everywhere but versus the Rebel, you know, the Rebel result.
And I got a last Saturday, a last second Friday pick for you. It's going to be in the finale today at Oaklawn. Number two, Nick and Zoe, 6-1 on the morning line. Really nice win last two starts back. Had no chance last time out of getting out of the gate slowly. Love the jock switch back to John Court. Love the 3-4-1 bullet work and preparation. And I'm picking Nick and Zoe on the front end and race down at Oaklawn.
Have you used Nick and Zoe already, or maybe Shap did? Maybe that was a Scott Shapiro pick earlier in the winter, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was Scott, probably.
All right, 6-1, the two in the ninth. That goes off at 6:10 tonight. And, James, you were all over Villanova, right, last week, going into the weekend. Let's get some thoughts about tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow night, NCAAs.
You know, one thing to me is that Kansas, you know, you look at them in the Final Fours in past years, and they really have a good record at semifinal games. They haven't performed as well in final games, but they get there and then carry their form forward. And I just think Villanova, you know, they lost the one guard last year, but he was more of a shooting guard for them in the tournament. This year, losing Justin Moore in the final seconds of the Elite Eight game, I think it's going to hurt him defensively. I think it's really going to open things up for Remy Martin to have a good game for Kansas. And I just think they'll wind up proving too much. I see the Duke-Villanova North Carolina game as like a pick-em, Steve. So to me, 4.5 points, I think Duke's overvalued in that role. At the most, I would think, you know, they should be a point and a half or 2 point favor. So from a betting perspective, you know, I'm going to lean towards North Carolina in there. So here you have me, a big Kentucky fan, picking Kansas and North Carolina on Saturday. Really just not ideal situation.
I love it. All right. I guess the Cardinal girls tonight. You're not.
Oh yeah. I'll cheer on the Lady Cardinals.
All right. Good job. Absolutely. Good job. Good job. All right, James. I appreciate it, and good luck this weekend. And of course, next week we'll have plenty to look forward to with Santa Anita and Keeneland opening, of course, and Bluegrass and the Wood. I'll be at Aqueduct. One thing I suppose we should do too, a quick reminder for everybody playing the leaderboard contest. This is it. You know.
Yeah. We got 100-point races. You pick a long shot, you could get back up there. I just want to remind people, go to KentuckyDerby.com, opt in for that contest. It pays $100 to the 100th finisher. So it's not too late to get in there. And if you could pick some winners in these final qualifiers, you could, like, get into the top 100, definitely, conceivably. And we also have bet-back specials at Oak Lawn and Turfway. So, yeah, check out the offers section at TwinSpires.com.
James Scully, everybody. James_Scully111. And we will get all the biggest prep races wrapped up next week. They'll still be the Lexington. In the meantime, let's take our only break of the morning. We'll come back. Marcus Hirsch ready for us back after a break.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half, essentially, of this Twin Spires weekend preview. Marcus Hirsch standing by, and I was surprised yesterday when I reached out to Marcus about